Final hour on this Thursday afternoon. Elliot Freeman joins us next from Sportsnet. 32 Thoughts. Check out that box. Really good job there. Hockey Night in Canada. And he's presented every week at this time by the Bank of England Mortgage. Elliot, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing better than Rocky Wirtz, and we're doing better than the Chicago Blackhawks these days because the on-ice has been a mess. Thank goodness they're in the Predators division. And off-ice seems to be a mess. I mean, what did you make of – I was sitting there reading that last night going, holy cow, what were they having, a town hall meeting? And the next thing you know,
yep.
Rocky is going Rocky Balboa with everybody?
I was watching it live. And
oh, wow.
You know, I've used this analogy sometimes today. Have you ever been among a group of people where someone says something and someone else either misinterprets it or reacts really wrongly to it, and the whole group is kind of sitting there going, "What just happened?" that was my reaction. I watched it, and I was and because here's the thing, like. Chicago had been preparing for that town hall for months. They knew after the Kyle Beach story came and we learned the truth of it, that they were going to have to spend some time working on and eventually explaining to us how they were going to repair their image. So they said a week earlier that they were going to be doing this. So you know what's going on behind the scenes. They're preparing. They're doing dry runs. They're saying, okay, what could all the potential questions be, and let's be ready for them, and here's our answers. Like, there's no way that they could have been unprepared for that kind of a question. And, you know, when Mark said in his tweet later that it was a softball, and, like, I was thinking, like, he was throwing them a belt-high fastball. They should have hit that into the fifth deck.
Yes.
And like, I was watching it, and I was like, what just happened here? Like, I honestly thought that somebody else in the audience had said something, because I was like, it couldn't have been the question. And then, you know, then another reporter got up and kind of backed Mark Lazarus, and he snapped on him too. And I was like, you know, holy cow. Like, it took me a couple of minutes to just to process what I just witnessed. And it was crazy. It's a failure. There's no question about it. It's done. You know, the Blackhawks were trying to put their reputation back together. It does huge damage to them. And you know what it also did, guys, was it torpedoed the reputation of two of the other people on stage. And one of them is his son, Danny Wirtz, is the CEO of the team. And the other is Jamie Faulkner, who's taken a very big role in the business operations and has talked a lot about modernizing their entire organization. Like, his son tried to speak up, and Rocky cut him off and just said, no, I'm going to do this. And, you know, you neuter people like that. And I just thought it was a devastating night for the organization, and there have to be consequences. There's no question about that. And, you know, the other thing, too, is the commissioner here, it's the All-Star weekend, so that sucks for the league.
Yep.
And also, the commissioner always meets with the media. He's supposed to tomorrow afternoon. So he knows now. He everything he wants to talk about, this is now foremost on his plate.
Yep. Thank you, Rocky. Thank you so much for that. Well, what do you think the fallout will be?
Well, I think at the very least, you know, Rocky Wirtz is a member of the executive committee. There's 10 owners who form the executive committee. Like, you know, I think you've got to remove them. I mean, I don't see how you can avoid that. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the challenge here is that this is like the Wirtz family has owned a team in the league and like Bill Wirtz, Rocky's father, basically ran the league for a long time. And, you know, this is a really, really powerful family. It's not an easy problem for the NHL to handle. But I think you kind of have to maybe suspend them or remove them from the operations of the team for a while. I think you probably have to take them off the executive committee. I don't know if you can force a sale unless he actually wants to sell the team. But, you know, I think the thing that is that you can't believe there's going to be, like, meaningful change or sorrow over what happened based on what occurred last night. And that's why I think you have to do something that shows and says, we have to take Rocky Wirtz out of the picture. Like, I don't see how you can advance right now if he's there.
It breaks our hearts in Nashville, I'll tell you. There's so much love for the Blackhawks.
I know how much you guys love the Blackhawks.
Really hate seeing them flounder.
I'll tell you this, I actually grew up a Blackhawks fan because when I was a kid, I'm from Toronto. I went to a Toronto-Chicago game at Maple Leaf Gardens, the old rink here, and some Blackhawks stopped to sign autographs for me. So I became a fan. I was happy to see them win when they won, but this has been a stinky few months to say the least. And, that last night, like, you know what, guys, like in the social media era, there's going to be unintentional things that you go through just because everything turns into a firestorm and you never know what it's going to be. Like, is there going to be things you're going to say, uh-oh, we're in trouble here, and nothing happens, and you're like, oh, nobody's going to care about this, and it turns into a fiasco. But what you can manage are self-inflicted wounds. And I think the thing that shocked me the most about last night was that was a self-inflicted wound, and you had to know that question was coming.
Right.
Like that was the most shocking thing about it to me.
Mind-blowing. Willie will remember this, Elliot. We had an intern here many years ago. This was right before the Chicago Blackhawks and Predators first round series. And she wanted to get in this business. She was lovely. She was great. Really smart, talented. But she decided that she was going all in on the Blackhawks. Remember, they were the one seed. Predators were the last team in. And she went all in on our show and our radio station and social media. And I don't know if she ever recovered. Like I said, she was a great, great girl. And I don't know if she ever recovered from it. Because as you can imagine, she got crushed when the Titans swept them. Like social media came out with its claws. But I will never forget that. Oh. But, yeah, it was bad. Oh, Willie, you remember that, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's tough, man. Like, you just never know. People talk about cancel culture and mob mentality. I don't think cancel culture is about one side or the other. I just think that we've given the power to the mob, and we don't control the mob. And you never know. You throw something in, does the mob care? Does the mob not care? It's like Russian roulette every day. And if they decide they do care about something, you know, it's hard to handle the first time. It really is, no question.
Can I go off the beaten path? You know, you've been doing this.
Sure.
You've been nice enough to do this with us for years now. Can I go off the beaten path for a second just because I want to get your take about another league, just to see what you think. What do you make of this whole Brian Flores and NFL story and situation, hiring practices and throwing games and all of that? Can you imagine if this was happening in the NHL? Just what's your perspective on that?
Well, the hiring practices thing, I can't argue with how he feels, right? You know, if that's what he feels and that's his experience, I can't argue with that. You know, the throwing games, like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys saw an example of that. Tim Peel, it was in your city.
Correct.
And he was basically fired the next day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he was fired the next day. And you know what? Like, I remember going on TV that night, and somebody told me, you guys know obviously who Darren Rovell is, right?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't tweet a lot about hockey, but when that Tim Peel thing happened, he tweeted about it right away and wrote a story about it. And, you know, like that, and someone said to me, this is a big deal for the NHL because we're really embracing gambling money now. I wrote about Austin Matthews this week. He's one of the first active players to sign a deal with a sports book in any sport in North America, if not the first. And you know, like, you can't, if you are asking people to gamble on your sport, you cannot let them feel in any way, shape, or form that it's not being done properly. It's
the integrity is being compromised. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a huge deal. Like, the allegations about racism and hiring practices, that's a huge deal, obviously, too. But so, like, they're both huge stories, as you said. And, yeah. You know, like I saw Elway come out with his defense today. I saw Ross come out with his defense today. Like, this is going to be an ugly, ugly story.
Yeah, somebody's lying because everybody's denying it vehemently. I mean, adamantly denying it. So somebody's not telling the truth in all of this.
Well, a buddy of mine who's a lawyer, he sent me a note today. He read Elway's statement. He says, Elway is using the words defamatory, so he thinks Elway's probably going to sue.
Wow.
Like, he thinks Elway's going to countersue now.
Interesting.
So it's really going to be...
Well, didn't the Dolphins use that word too?
Well, yeah. I didn't see Ross's statement. I just heard...
I think he used that word too. Yeah.
Okay. And so then, at the very least, like, the counter suits are going to come here. And, you know, I'm not judging who's right or who's wrong. I will say this. I'm not going to argue with how Brian Flores feels about the hiring. I mean, the stuff about the money, I think you can prove that or not prove that, but you can't argue with how he feels in his own skin about the hiring practices.
I've saved all the Predator stuff for Willie, so he's going to get some juicy stuff. We're going to step away for a couple minutes and come back with Elliot Friedman. His appearance every week presented by Bank of England Mortgage. More with Elliot on the other side here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We continue our conversation with one of the best, Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts, Hockey Night in Canada, joins us every Thursday at this time. Elliot, it's good to talk to you again. The last couple times we've done this, it's been a game day. The timing hasn't worked for me, so I'm raring to go here. And I did really enjoy the latest installment of the 32 Thoughts. Lots of thoughts on the Predators. And I think everybody here appreciates you know, when somebody does the homework like you and sort of shares some of the storylines that are going on here, and you kind of see it play out to, like, the league audience, the national audience.
Well, I do think, Willie, one of the things, unfortunately, is because our rules are restrictive up here, I haven't been able to see a lot of people. And, you know, obviously my focus is on Canada because I work for Hockey Night in Canada. But we're fortunate enough to have a good American audience that is just saying, like, you know, we need a little bit more on our teams. So I started looking over and I started looking at the standings and saying, well, who haven't I written about? And, you know, Nashville was one team. And obviously, as you saw, I talked to Los Angeles and Minnesota too.
Yeah.
But I just felt like, you know, I hadn't been serving the Predator fan base enough in the blog, and I wanted to get to it. And David Poile was really good about it, which is no surprise.
I love the story about the guy that reminded David Poile about where Tanner Janot came from. You know, we love the great underdog story that he is, and there's been a lot of great things written about his story, but that's one I hadn't heard yet. Share that one with us.
Well, it just happened last week, right? You guys were up in Edmonton, which is always, you know, balmy and lovely at this time of year. And you guys were up there last Thursday, and, you know, the Oilers beat you in the shootout, that ridiculous McDavid goal. But David Poile said he was going down the elevator after the game, and there was a scout there who, you know, kind of just said to him after Janot, the impact he has, is just that, you know, when he was 17 years old in the Western Hockey League, he had one goal. And, you know, I understand that, you know, not everybody recognizes this, but to be that age in that league, which is one of the top junior leagues in the world, if not the top junior league in the world, and have one goal and be where he is almost a decade later, that is unheard of. It is unheard of. You know, he's got 13, like, the hardest place to score in the NHL is 5-on-5, and he's got, what, 13 5-on-5 goals this year?
Correct.
To go from one goal overall in the WHL at 17 to 13 goals at 5-on-5 now. It's incredible. And the other funny story that you kind of David Poile talked about with him is that a couple of years ago they sent him down to the East Coast League below Milwaukee, and he was pissed off at them. And they're like, we just want you to play. You know, we think this is a good thing for you. And, you know, he was mad about it, the player. And it turned out to be a good thing. But, you know, one thing that actually didn't make it in there was he talked about Janot and he talked about Carrier. And he said that these are two players that we admit we probably didn't know what we had. You know, we'd given them chance. We like with Janot, they liked him. And with Carrier, they saw him as potentially a longtime American Hockey League player. But they didn't know at what they had at the NHL level, if they had anything at the NHL level, until both of those guys made them realize they were here to stay. And, you know, he credited them. Those are definitely two players playing roles on the Predators right now that I don't think Nashville as an organization expected.
No question. So I think we're all curious now going forward, Elliot. You mentioned in your notes column you sized up what's going on in Minnesota. We just watched them last night on TNT blast the Blackhawks. So you've got an interesting race in the Central going on. You've got four teams that are really good, and yeah. The next thing you know, one of them is going to have to play in the wild card. The math says so. Only the top three can be automatic bids, etc. So with the Predators in this stage that they've made public, you know, the competitive transition, trying to get younger, they're a little bit ahead of schedule. So how tempting do you think it will be for David Poile to try to add a piece or two, even if it's not a big piece, to try to compete with these teams that are around them?
I don't get the impression that he's like the thing that I noticed in my conversation with him is that, number one, he said he really likes the group and he doesn't really want to break them up. I think the Forsberg thing, and he was very careful, as you saw the quote, which for those of you who didn't see it, it was, I don't want to I asked him if he could see a situation where he keeps an unsigned Forsberg through the trade deadline. And he said, I don't want to box myself in with an answer. He made it clear it's not really what he prefers to do, but he would never say never. So, you know, he was very careful with that. But, you know, the impression I got from him is that he still thinks that right now their goal this year is to make the playoffs. If they get in, they'll adjust, and I think they will get in. But what it said to me is that he doesn't necessarily think yet that they're like a top Stanley Cup contender. And when you're not a top Stanley Cup contender, you don't do anything short term. So my sense is that what he's going to do at the deadline is going to be determined by, A, can he do something that isn't really if it's a short-term thing, then it's not for a big price. It's for a small price. If he does anything major, aside from Forsberg, it's for something that's got some term or team control to it. And the Forsberg situation is kind of over on itself because he's going to have to decide how talks are going at the deadline and make his call then.
With the Predators having played more games than most of the other teams in the West, their month of February is pretty spread out. Then you get into March and April, and everything is a frenzy all around the league. Everybody knows that. So is this maybe the climate? Is this the time that you could maybe take and really try to work on the Forsberg deal from all parties here?
Well, I would think they're going to take a big run at it. I have no doubt. I'm sure they've already, like David Poile and J.P. Barrie, who represents Forsberg, they've been around a long time. Like, there's a lot of experience at this. I would suspect that, I just think in this day and age, teams and agents, they know comparables. You know, they know, there's no question in my mind that Nashville, maybe they don't know exactly what it's going to take, but they have an excellent idea of what it's going to take to sign them. And that's not just money, that's also the trade protection and all the stuff that comes with it. I would think, though, that, yes, I mean, look, we're 7 weeks away from the deadline, right? Like, the calendar dictates it's time to get to work. And I would think that Poile and Barrie, I wouldn't be surprised if they meet face-to-face at some points and they sit there and they say, okay, let's get to where we are. Like, you know, I just, you know, I think the Predators, like, they have to take a big run at signing him. There's really, the year he's having, there's no other option. And, you know, I think it's going to come down to, are the Predators willing to take the kind of, I don't know if it'll be the same number as Josi. I would suspect that, this is purely my guess, that Josi remains their highest paid player, but they're going to have to take a pretty significant leap in terms of money and protection to make this work. And then it comes down to, does Forsberg want to stay? You guys know that better than me. You guys have told me you believe he wants to stay. I think at the end of the day, if the team gets close and the player wants to stay, they find a way to make it work.
Okay, so before we let you go, let's do a comparison. You've got Nashville that has some pretty good cap flexibility, has a pretty young nucleus. I was really interested to sort of contrast that with the Wild, who are having a great season, a little bit like the Predators, maybe even better than people thought. They had a good year last year, but they're even better this year, it looks like. Bill Guerin knows he's got that big bill coming up down the road with the salary cap, but he's got a pretty good squad. So how does that affect what he does at the trade deadline this year?
Well, I think that the one thing that Bill Guerin has shown, and I think there are some GMs in the league who are pretty fearless. I think your GM is pretty fearless. He's understated about it, but I think he's shown with the moves he's made, he's not afraid. I think Bill Guerin's cut for that same cloth. Now, Guerin, if you'll notice it, they've signed a bunch of guys this year. They signed Foligno to an extension. Now they signed Jordan Greenway to an extension. You know, he told me the other day that he's got to slot everybody in because of those cap questions he has. They lose $13 million off the cap next year and $15 million the 2 years after. So he's trying to slot everybody in. I think the biggest thing about Guerin is that he likes his team. He's like Poyle. He doesn't want to break them up. I think he looks to see, is there some depth they can add that really helps them? Because I don't know how many long-term commitments he can bring in, if any. I'll tell you this, though, guys, this year. Those Central Division playoffs, they're going to be insane. Those are four mean teams. And if Dallas gets in, Like I look at you guys, I look at Minnesota, I look at Colorado, and I look at St. Louis, and I see four really mean teams. And if Dallas gets in, they're a pretty mean team too. Like, that's, nobody's getting out of those playoff rounds unscathed in those series.
Yeah, let's hope it keeps materializing like that. It's going to be fun. Elliot, as always, great stuff. Enjoy your break. I guess you're not going to Vegas. Is that correct?
No, we're doing it from here. Unfortunately, we're not going, which is, you know, it's I'm really disappointed. I love Vegas, but it's good for my bank account. You know, too many hours at those craps tables, guys.
All right. Well, we'll enjoy the festivities, and we'll talk to you again next week. Great stuff.
All right. All the best.
All right. Great stuff. Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts always brings it strong. The very best when it comes to hockey analysis. When we come back, we will hash out a few more things that we just heard. He's had his thoughts, the latest thoughts on Forsberg. I've got a few thoughts as well as he continues to light it up. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on 102.5 The Game.
Thank you, Phil. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you on this rainy Thursday. Elijah Campbell, Hillside Medical Game Studios. Pretty interesting stuff, as always, from Elliot Friedman. By the way, if you were not caught up on, you didn't see or read or hear about the Chicago Blackhawks town hall, I mean, go back and read. It's Rocky Warts. It's just sit back. If you need readers, get your readers out. Maybe start up a fire. It's going to get cold again. Get the fireplace going and just read away, because it's unbelievable. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 101. I mean, just the basics, like what not to do. I guess he threw that manual into the fireplace because he did not follow proper protocols. All right, what stood out to you when it comes to the Predators? Let's get into the Forsberg stuff.
Well, I think he agrees with just a thought I had. I think. This is a time you try to work on it, not necessarily during the All-Star break, but during the month of February, you've got some days. And, of course, you don't necessarily have to. You could do it on the day of a game if you wanted to. But you just, it's a little more of a slower pace. And there might even be a day where you could talk to Philip face-to-face if you're David Poile. I just think this is the time where you can take a, as you heard Elliott say, take a run at it. See how close you can get. Or maybe even you get it done. But the more time goes by, the more he's doing well. Trading him is really not an option. I just don't see.
Although he said ruling out anything. He's not ruling out anything.
Who's not ruling out anything?
Didn't he say that about David Poile? He said everything was on the table. He wasn't going to rule out anything.
I just don't think he wanted to give Elliott too much of an impressive.
I'm just repeating what he said.
No, but that wasn't the question. The question was, would you keep him after the trade deadline? And I think the answer to that is yes. He kept Mikael Granlund and Matthias Ekholm after the trade deadline.
Yep.
And then eventually signed them back. I don't think it's the best case scenario. I don't think he wants to do that, but I think he would do that. He's not going to trade him. It's just not realistic that he's going to trade Philip Forsberg with what's going on with the team and what's going on with the seasons he's having.
Goes up to the player and talks shop either. I don't, during the course of the season, about this. I don't think that happens.
He did it with Roman Josi. That was during the season.
How does the agent feel about that? Because
you ask permission. You ask permission and see if the guy's willing or not. Hmm. If he says no,
is that
then
typical,
you're okay
though?
With that. Are the Predators typical?
Well, I'm just asking, is that typical that happens? I mean, isn't that a pretty low percentage? Because that's why you have an agent.
And the player has every right to say, this is not my department. I'm going to let my agent take charge of that. I mean, it was unique that Roman was the captain, so maybe that made it a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. But I think Philip Forsberg has been around so long, I think there's a relationship there that you could have a talk. And I think the agent would have to say, okay, I trust David Poile. He's not going to have any funny business here. He's been doing this for a long time. If you want to do it, it could be the agent talking to Philip Forsberg. If you want to do it, feel comfortable, then do it. If you don't feel comfortable, then I will call him and say he's just not comfortable doing that. Let's continue to try to hammer it away, you know, from our end here.
I feel like I'm typically trying to give the side or the perspective of the organization, kind of the business side of things, but this time I'm going to flip to the other side since you've posed the question. Why would his agent, or why would, you know, I guess in this case his agent's going to do the talking. Why would his agent discuss when you say try to hammer something out? This is what every player and slash agent wants. This is the dream scenario going into a UFA offseason. You're having your career year. Why would they do that? Now, they hold all the cards. Why would they do that?
I think the answer to that is,
they would hammer anything out?
I think the real what it boils down to is what Elliott said. Does he want to stay here? Is his first choice to stay here? If his first choice is to stay here, then I think you have the runway to get it done before you hit the open market.
If your first choice was to stay here, why wouldn't you already have a deal in place?
Because maybe you didn't know it was your first choice at the beginning of the season, and things have materialized a certain way.
Fair enough.
In the last few months. The other part of it is I tried to sit down and do the math. The fact that the Predators can offer 8 years and all the other teams cannot go past seven, The money will be better here, ultimately, unless the Predators really are lowballing him, which I don't think at the end of the day will be the case. I don't know if they've offered their best deal yet that they're going to, because his stock just keeps going up with the year he's having. But let's just do the math. Let's just start with an offer of 8 times 8. That's $64 million, right? If I did my math, multiplication tables, right? 8 times 8 is 64. So for a team that can only offer 7 years, they have to automatically go to $9 million just to get to 63. That's still not more money than the Predators can offer. It's more money per year, but the Predators are offering more money at $1 million less. Now, if the Predators want to go up to 8.5 or closer to $9 million a year, which is just under what Roman Josi makes, let's just say 8 times 9. That's $72 million. So now a team has got to go over $10 million a year to come close to matching that. And that doesn't even factor in what we've been talking about all day with Aaron Rodgers. No state income tax here. So the money is not going to be better somewhere else. The Predators can match financially anything that anybody's going to offer unless somebody is just going to pay stupid money. How many teams really even have that except for the Arizonas of the world? Or the teams that, you know, most of the good teams are right up against the cap. The Predators are not. So there's just so much, I think, that is going for the Predators in this negotiation. And at the end of the day, Darren, what you're saying is Philip Forsberg has a lot of leverage. There's no question. But who is going to go more than that? Is somebody going to offer him $10 million a year? Who's got that money?
Takes one team, and no, I don't think so. I think that's personally overpaying, but doesn't mean somebody won't do it. People overpay all the
time. Yes, but is that where he wants to go?
Oh, I mean,
is that better than what you get here?
I don't know the teams that are the team that will be willing to go there.
The Flyers. Let's just say they want to do something stupid and crazy. I got to change it up. I mean, that would be an organization that's done stuff like that before.
Sure.
Would they go $10 million a year for him?
I wouldn't rule anything out with the Flyers.
Okay. And, you know, I have to agree with that. They've done some zany things. So if you're Philip Forsberg, is that appealing to you? Is that where you want to go?
If you're looking at this year's team, no.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
If you're projected, you know what you have here.
You know what you have here. I mean, that would signal to me that he's just deep down unhappy about being him. I've never gotten that impression,
Willie, from Philip Forsberg. I'm not going to push back on anything you're saying. Yeah. I agree with you, but if it was that simple, the deal would be done, and it's not that simple.
No, it's definitely not.
It's very clear they're going to wait. That's the way it seems to me. It seems very clear to me that everything you're laying out, I think, is probably realistic. Like, probably realistic that no one's going to be able to offer something more, because once you talk about the extra year and once you talk about state income tax, how many hockey markets don't have a state income tax? Not very many. Right? So your options are dwindled way down. Okay? You've got, the Florida teams?
Right.
Texas? There's not very many. So you got small.
Vegas.
Vegas.
Florida, Texas.
Vegas is always a wild card because they're not afraid to spend. They're not afraid to make big names.
$10 million over the cap. They just signed Jack Eichel.
They remind me of the Rams. They're not afraid. Okay,
they got to trade 6 guys to open up the kind of room it would take.
They've proven they're not afraid. I mean, there's no history. Right now, the short amount of time they've been in this league, there's no proof at all. The short history they have that they're afraid of anything. But anyway, I'm saying, with that being said, there's no doubt what you're laying out is probably true. So if it's pretty easy for us to sit here and talk about it out loud and conclude it's probably going to be the best here, then once again, I say, why isn't a deal in place?
Well, because
they probably made the determination that they're going to wait till after the season.
I think that might have been the thinking at one time in the off season, but as his track has gone one way, Forsberg, it's gone up, right? The arrow has been up. He's been awesome. And the team has fallen into place so well. I think it still has you saying, this is not an easy negotiation. There's a lot to hash out here. Exactly what is he worth? How do we get the details done? But as long as there's a mutual thought of, I like it here, I like where the team is going, this is the place that can offer me the best financial package, as long as he's not just itching to get out of here, I feel like it will get done. I feel like it will get done. But that's just me. I'm sitting on the outside here not knowing anything more than I haven't had these private conversations or anything. I'm just looking at impressions that I get the lay of the land. The Vegas thing, Vegas is $10 million over this year's salary cap. So I agree with you. They'll do just about anything, but I just don't think I don't see how they can clear enough money to
even
make a run.
You didn't know that when they acquired Jack Eichel? Do you think that?
Oh, yeah.
You don't think they didn't know that? Of course
they knew it.
Well, they're not scared. Once again, they're not scared.
They're going to have to trade a couple of really good players before they even get him under the cap, let alone go after Philip Forsberg.
They've proven they'll do it.
They've got to be tapped out.
They've proven they'll do it. They're, like I said, they're the L.A. Rams version in hockey. They are not afraid to acquire. They love names. They love them. And they're not afraid by big salaries or big contracts. And I'm not saying that Vegas is the one, is that team. I'm just saying, or could be that potential suitor. I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised with them. I will never rule them out. Until they change the way they go about their business, if this is the way they conduct business, I would never rule them out. But time will tell. We'll come back, put a bow on Thursday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Almost, Jim. Almost. Did you see where Gary Rankin retired from Alcoa?
No.
17 state titles. 467 wins. How about that?
He goes back a ways.
That's kind of a pretty darn good. Pretty good record. Pretty good resume, huh? Not bad. Last night, Vanderbilt was in Lexington to take on Kentucky. You know what we talked about at the very end of the show yesterday? They were a heavy underdog. They fought, man. They battled.
They did battle. They played well. They finally got...
Pippen had a big game.
They finally got Liam Robbins, the center that was a transfer. They finally got him in a uniform and got him out on the court. He definitely looked like he hadn't played all year long, but he showed some tools. He's enormous. He had a couple of flashes of some talent. I'm hoping that goes somewhere. And it also allowed them to rest Quentin Melora Brown, the only other big man that they have, who has had a really good year, honestly, but he's a limited player. I thought they really did a good job of making it tough on Shibway. It was quite the game to watch. Both teams got teed up. Both coaches got teed up. Mm-hmm. It was a very physical game. There were elbows called on both teams, which I'm starting to really not like that rule. I think we got to come to grips with something. When teams play hard, there will be some elbows errantly that actually clip people. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a flagrant foul and go to the monitor every single time somebody whines and says it was an elbow. It's not what the intent of the rule was. So that's a discussion for another day. But at the end of the night, it's another chapter in the slow, really small progress that Jerry Stackhouse has made. They're better. You know, that might be the toughest team in the nation right now. They're right up there. Kentucky's a top five team. You're playing in Rupp, and you hung around for 40 minutes. You know, Kentucky a couple times looked like they were going to make the knockout punch.
Yep.
And they'd come back, and they were right in it. Pippen had a good game, but it's a loss. So now Vanderbilt has Saturday. They're retiring Shane Foster's number. LSU comes to town. Vanderbilt hasn't had a big win at home in a long time. Not since Jerry Stackhouse has been the coach that I can remember. A big win over a top 25. That's what they need.
But LSU's kind of going the wrong direction here lately.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But they're a top 25 team. This is a gettable game. They need this game. They've had some good efforts that have come up with a loss, and then they've had some games where they missed an opportunity to get a win and didn't have their best effort. South Carolina at home this year. After they won at Arkansas, come back home, didn't play great against South Carolina, and fell. So they're getting better. You know, I don't think it's out of the realm that they could win several more games in the league here, which is way more than they've won. They might end up the year with more league wins than they had the last 2 years combined. I don't know what the number is, but they're better.
Which isn't saying a whole lot.
But ultimately, there's a next level they have to get to. I'm curious what Robbins looks like after a few more weeks playing. Hopefully he can stay healthy, because he's a big man that can move. That's something you don't see too often. So it'll be interesting. And I still think Kentucky is one heck of a team. That might have been a pretty good night to catch Kentucky coming off of a great win at Kansas. Maybe Kentucky wasn't razor sharp, but Kentucky has got – they got some players, man. That Shibwe is really something. You got to battle to get any rebound away from that guy. He got in foul trouble, didn't play all game. He still had, 17 or 18 rebounds?
What probably – you know, if you're the rest of the country, that's what probably scares you the most, is they're not depending on one guy. Even though, you know, one or two guys are really good, they get production, you know, elsewhere. When somebody is hurt, you know, Washington, or somebody gets in foul trouble, it's like somebody else steps up and has a big game. So that's a pretty scary proposition for everybody else.
I like how their pieces fit. The Kentucky pieces fit. That's one of the things I still see with Vanderbilt. They've got a lot of guys. Sometimes they're playing 10 guys. Or, you know, a couple of guys rotate out of the rotation. A couple of guys come back in who haven't played much. They're still trying to find that right formula. Kentucky, the pieces fit. You know exactly what everybody's role is. They got the shooter on the outside. What's his name?
Kellen Grady, yeah, the 2,000-point scorer at Davidson.
Yeah, I mean, that guy is a perfect complement to Shibwe on the inside. You know, they've got Washington, who's a great talent. You know, I just like how they're meshing. So good showing by Vanderbilt, but now down the stretcher, they need W's, right? It's not just good enough right now to look good and come up a little bit short. It's time to start getting some W's. That's the next step for Jerry Stackhouse's group. I love how they play hard. He runs good stuff. They just need to get over that hump, get some W's, get some momentum going.
A very, very interesting game will be February 15th, 12 days. So is that a Saturday? What is that, Sunday?
That's a Wednesday, I believe.
That's a Tuesday. It's a Tuesday.
Tuesday
the 15th, Kentucky in Knoxville to take on Tennessee. Ooh, I'm telling you, that will be a good one. That will be a really, really good game. And speaking of that, Elijah, are you doing a little special hour tonight during the 6 o'clock hour?
That's right. Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic is going to be live tonight. Wow. 6 to 7. We're going to talk about that Vanderbilt-Kentucky game. Talk about Tennessee maybe turning around the offense a little bit. A whole lot to get into tonight.
Moving on up. He's going live, everybody.
He's going live.
We'll do it live.
Let the rookies out. Let them go. Get them the ball.
6 o'clock hour tonight. College basketball hour. We'll see if Slice Bread has any comments on the message board at 7 o'clock. That'll do it for our show today. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Be safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.
Slice Bread.